Welcome back to the deep dive, everybody. We are so excited to jump into another really fascinating case today.
Absolutely.
I think this is one that a lot of our listeners can probably relate to, at least in terms of the drama. We're talking about a high stakes corporate takeover situation. You know, you read about these in the headlines all the time, right? And it always comes down to this question of, are the players, are they playing fair? Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on behind the scenes? And today's case really gets at the heart of, well, what does it mean to manipulate the market? What are the legal boundaries when you're in the middle of one of these these big corporate battles? So we're going to be unpacking a really important Supreme Court case, Schreiber v. Burlington Northern. This one's from 1985, so it's been around for a while, but it really set the stage for how we think about market manipulation, especially when it comes to these things called tender offers, right?
Absolutely. And that's really what this deep dive is going to be all about. You know, we're going to try to answer what seems like a simple question on its face, but it's actually super important for securities law. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, when we're talking about these tender offers and we're looking at Section 14 of the Securities Exchange Act, what does it actually mean for someone's conduct to be manipulative? You know, what does that word actually mean?
Right.
And this case, Schreiber, this really does give us a pretty clear answer. And it all goes back to like one of the most basic ideas behind like how we regulate the securities markets.
Okay. So walk us through what happened in this case.
Okay. So imagine it's late 1982 and you've got Burlington Northern and they decide, hey, we're going to make a hostile tender offer for El Paso Gas.
Okay.
Right. So they offer a pretty good price, $24.04 a share for about 25.1 million shares, which would give them control, right? So this is, you know, this is a real serious offer.
Right.
And the shareholders are all over it. So by the deadline, the offer is totally full. Like everyone wants to sell their shares. They're jumping at it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it seems like, okay, deal's going to go through. But then all of a sudden, Burlington just pulled out. They rescind the whole offer.
Really?
Yeah.
Just completely pulls the rug out.
Yeah.
That seems odd. Why would they do that?
Well, here's the thing. You got to remember, you know, these are huge companies and there are a lot of moving parts behind the scenes. So it turns out that while all this is happening, Burlington's actually talking with El Paso's management. So, you know, the folks who were originally fighting off this hostile takeover,
right,
they start negotiating a different kind of deal. And what comes out of that is a whole new, what they call a friendly takeover agreement. This one's announced in January of 83, so a couple months later.
Oh, okay.
And things have changed a little bit. So instead of buying as many shares from the public shareholders, Burlington now says, okay, we're going to buy about 21 million shares from them, and we're going to buy another 4 million directly from El Paso itself. But the price per share stays the same at $24. Okay, so the price per share is the same, but they're buying fewer shares from the public. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Okay, so what's the catch here? Why would they change the deal like that?
Well, it's not just about the number of shares. Remember those golden parachutes we mentioned earlier? Well, it turns out those became part of this new deal. And those are those really nice severance packages that top executives get if their company gets taken over. So, you know, when these golden parachute agreements popped up in this new friendly deal, it really made people wonder, like, hold on a second. Did El Paso's management maybe favor this new deal? You know, the friendly one?
Right.
Even if it meant the shareholders, you know, the ones who were all ready to sell their shares at $24 in the first offer, maybe they got a worse deal.
That makes sense. That's interesting.
Yeah. So there's this whole question of, you know, what's going on? Who's benefiting here? So anyway, this new January offer goes ahead. And just like the first one, it's oversubscribed. So, you know, shareholders who wanted to sell all their shares, they didn't get to. They got paid for, you know, a portion of what they wanted to sell. They got prorated payments. And that's where our main character in this case comes in, Barbara Schreiber. She decides, you know, I'm not happy with this. This doesn't seem right. So she files this class action lawsuit saying, hey, Burlington, you guys engaged in some shady stuff here. You engage in manipulative conduct. And that's where Section 14E comes in.
Okay, so she's claiming they manipulated the market in some way, but how specifically? Like, what were her main arguments?
Well, she had two big ones. First, she said, look, when Burlington just suddenly pulled out of that December offer, that first offer that was fully subscribed, that totally messed up the market for El Paso stock.
Right.
You know, all those shareholders who thought they were going to sell their shares for $24, they got hurt. The price probably dropped after Burlington pulled out. So they lost money.
Makes sense.
And then her second argument was that Burlington was being sneaky by not telling anybody about those golden parachute agreements when they announced the January offer.
Okay.
She said that was deceptive. You know, it was hiding important information from shareholders.
Right. So she's saying they weren't being transparent. They were hiding stuff.
Exactly. So she takes them to court and, you know, hoping for justice for herself and all the other shareholders.
Right.
But guess what?
What happened?
She doesn't win at first. So the district court, they look at the case and say, you know what? We don't think this counts as manipulative conduct under this law.
Okay.
The way they saw it, to be manipulative under Section 14E, there has to be some kind of trickery involved, some kind of deception.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't see enough evidence of that in what Burlington did.
Okay, so they dismissed the case. What did Schreiber do?
Well, she appealed the decision, of course, right? Took it up to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. But Third Circuit, they agreed with the district court. They said, yeah, we don't think there was enough deception here to call this manipulative under the law.
Okay, so she loses again.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
At this point, there's actually a bit of a disagreement between different courts across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, different federal courts of appeal had different opinions on what exactly manipulative meant in this context.
So there wasn't like a clear, consistent interpretation across the board.
Exactly. It's what they call a circuit split. You know, different parts of the country are applying the same law in different ways. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. So to sort this whole mess out, the Supreme Court decides to step in. And they say, okay, we're going to hear this case. We need to make a final decision on what manipulative really means.
So the Supreme Court steps in to settle this debate, the circuit split.
Exactly.
What was like the core issue they had to figure out?
Well, like we said before, it all comes down to that word manipulative. Like when you're talking about Section 14E, what does that word actually mean?
Right.
Does that mean you have to, you know, outright lie or mislead people, like with those golden parachutes, for example?
Right.
Or can it also mean just doing something that affects the stock price, even if you're not trying to trick anyone?
Okay.
That was the big question.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what the Supreme Court had to answer.
And what did they say? How did they ultimately define manipulative?
Well, they actually ended up agreeing with the lower courts, the ones that had ruled against Schreiber. They said, look, to be manipulative under Section 14E, you got to have some kind of misrepresentation or nondisclosure.
Okay.
So basically, they're saying you have to be dishonest in some way.
So it's not enough to just, like, do something clever or strategic that ends up impacting the stock price.
No, not if you're being honest about what you're doing.
Nope.
So in Schreiber's case, they said, yeah, maybe what Burlington did wasn't, you know, the best thing for the shareholders, but we don't see any evidence that they lied or hid anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So not a violation of the law, according to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit, because I think there's a lot here for law students to think about.
Absolutely.
What was the Supreme Court's reasoning here? Like, what were the key points they made to support their decision?
So the court, they really focused on the purpose of Section 14E. They said, look, this law is all about disclosure.
Okay.
It's about making sure investors have all the information they need to make smart choices.
Right.
The goal isn't necessarily to, like, make sure every deal is fair or to protect shareholders from every bad outcome.
Right, right.
It's about giving them the facts and letting them decide for themselves.
So transparency is key.
Exactly. And that makes sense, right?
Right.
Like, if you're going to play in the stock market, you got to be ready for some ups and downs.
Right.
You got to do your research. You got to understand the risks. And you got to make your own choices.
Right. It's not the court's job to, like, hold your hand through every investment.
No, exactly. And the court also looked at how the word manipulative is used in other parts of securities law. And they said, look, it's always been about deception.
Okay.
You know, tricking people, creating a false impression of the market. And they wanted to keep that definition consistent across all the different laws.
That makes sense.
It's important to have that kind of clarity and consistency, especially in something as complex as securities law.
Absolutely. So what about those golden parachutes? Like, Schreiber made a big deal about those not being disclosed. How did the Supreme Court handle that part of her argument?
Right. Well, they did address it, but in the end, it didn't change their decision.
Okay.
They pointed out that the whole golden parachute thing happened with the January offer, which came after Burlington had already backed out of the December offer. So there wasn't really a direct connection between those undisclosed golden parachutes and the losses that Schreiber was claiming.
Okay.
Like, she was saying she lost money because Burlington pulled out of the first deal.
Right.
But the golden parachutes were part of a whole different deal.
Right, right.
It's like, you know, you can't blame apples for what happened with the oranges.
Right, they're separate issues.
Yeah. And then the court went on to say, you know, even if those golden parachutes seemed unfair, or even if the whole January deal seemed unfair, that's not really what Section 14 is about.
Okay.
It's not about making sure every deal is perfectly fair. It's about disclosure.
Right, right.
They actually had a really great quote about that.
Oh, yeah? What was that?
Justice Berger, who wrote the majority opinion. He said, let me get it right. He said, nowhere in the legislative history is there the slightest suggestion that Section 14E serves any purpose other than disclosure.
Mm.
Like, they're really hammering that point home.
Right.
They're saying Congress didn't write this law to be some kind of, like, corporate fairness police.
Right, right.
They wrote it to make sure investors have the information they need.
That's a good point. So, I mean, what does this all mean for our listeners, you know, those who are studying law? What are the key takeaways from this case?
I think the biggest takeaway is that in securities law, when it comes to these tender offers, transparency is king.
Okay.
Like, companies can be pretty aggressive. They can be strategic. They can, you know, try to get the best deal for themselves.
Right.
But they can't lie. They can't hide important information.
Right. So the line is drawn at dishonesty, not necessarily at, like, tough negotiating tactics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the other big takeaway, I think, is that it's really important to understand what the laws actually say.
Right.
You know, what was Congress trying to do when they wrote these laws? What were their goals?
Right. Statutory interpretation.
Exactly. You can't just, like, read a law and say, oh, I think it means this.
Right. Right.
You got to look at the history. You got to look at the context. Yeah. You got to really understand what Congress intended.
So it's not just about, like, memorizing the words. It's about understanding the bigger picture.
Exactly.
So, you know, this case really highlights this ongoing tension in corporate law, right?
Yeah.
Between protecting investors, making sure things are fair, and also allowing companies to, you know, operate efficiently, to make deals, to be competitive.
Absolutely. And it's a tough balance to strike.
Right.
And I think this case kind of shows us where the law draws that line.
Okay.
Like, it's saying, we want companies to be able to do business, but they got to do it honestly.
Right, right.
They got to play by the rules, and those rules are all about transparency.
Okay, so as we wrap up, what's, like, the one sentence takeaway from Schreiber? Like, if our listeners only remember one thing, what should it be?
I think the most important thing to remember is that to get someone in trouble under Section 14 for being manipulative, you got to show that they were being deceitful, that they were misrepresenting or hiding something important.
Okay, so deception is the key.
Exactly.
So it all goes back to that idea of disclosure, right? Like, that's what the Supreme Court really emphasized.
Absolutely. That's really what the whole case is about.
Okay, well, that's a lot to think about. And I think this case raises even more questions than it answers. So for all of you out there who are, you know, really digging into this stuff, here's something to chew on. If disclosure is, like, the main tool we have for regulating these corporate takeovers, you know, making sure they're fair, is that enough?
Right.
Like, does it really protect investors in every situation? Mm. Or are there times when we need to, you know, step in and regulate the substance of these deals, you know, how they're actually structured, not just what information is being shared? It's a really interesting question, and it's something to keep in mind as you, you know, keep learning about securities law and corporate law.
Definitely a lot to think about.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking this deep dive with us today. It's been a really fascinating discussion.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And we'll see you all next time on The Deep Dive.